Welcome to our Bible study segment, and we've got Beth Seifert here with today's Bible lesson in 1 Samuel. So open your Bibles there if you have them, and remember, all of these segments are recorded and saved, archived in our Bible studies archives. You can download the study guides that go with each one of these and have your own Bible study with your ladies around your own kitchen table. And we just welcome Beth Seifert. Thanks for joining us, Beth.
Hey, Amy. Well, today we're going to break up this section again and discuss it in two parts again. So we're going to go through 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 25 through 40. But to begin with, we're going to stop after verse 31. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open to 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 25. And the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel." And David said to the men who stood by him, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine, and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him in the same way, "So shall it be done to the man who kills him." Now Eliab, David's eldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption and the evil of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done now? Was it not but a word?" And he turned away from him toward another, and spoke in the same way, and the people answered him again as before. And with the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and Saul sent for David. Now, David sees the insult that Goliath is giving here as what it truly is, an insult against God. He is irate that Goliath has been allowed to insult God for 40 days without any censure or response. He immediately starts asking what will be done for the man who kills Goliath, probably partly to find out why no one has taken this incentive, and partly to find out what promises have been made if he does kill Goliath. His brother Eliab, the oldest son, gets mad. Keep in mind, Eliab was the one first brought before Samuel when David was anointed. Even Samuel thought when he saw Eliab, "Oh, here's the new king." Eliab looked the part by human standards, and as we see here, he had zero respect for his little brother. Probably there was some jealousy going on here. Eliab probably feels that he deserved the kingship because he's the oldest son, but that was given to David. To Eliab's envious heart, he sees David as yet again trying to gain glory for himself. And Eliab is also mad because he hasn't done what he should have done. He's mad because his youngest brother has more courage than he does and is ready to take on this giant when Eliab has spent the last 40 days hiding. Really, David is showing himself worthy of what the kingship is, and that infuriates Eliab. He tries to minimize David, but that's nothing new to David. David knows he's insignificant. He knows that he's not important. But what David understands that Eliab has missed is that it is God who will win this battle, not David. So it doesn't matter if David is important or significant or not. Saul's attendants, possibly the one who knew of David's heart for God from chapter 16, hears that David is there and reports what David is asking to Saul. David had been asking everyone to make sure that they all had the same story so that he knew what was really being offered as an incentive for the person who killed Goliath. Everyone in the Israelite camp now knows that there is someone who was willing to fight Goliath after 40 days of everyone else hiding. God knows the heart so well. David was the first Israelite to burn with anger over Goliath's treatment of God's army, while Eliab burned over anger at his brother because they were God's army, not because this was his brother's and his family. David is righteously indignant that God should be treated this way. He sees the issues clearly, which sets him apart from everyone else on the battlefield, including Saul. Yet one more reason why God chose David to be the new king. It's a big contrast. And isn't it amazing to see the calm with which David assesses the situation? He isn't the biggest or the boldest, but he knows who is really the power here. God. David knows that God can do anything, and David is ready to take action when he sees how God has been mistreated and how everyone else has allowed God to be mocked for 40 days. David has complete peace knowing that he isn't fighting for himself, he's fighting for God. He's ready to take action. He knows his motive is not a selfish one, so his brother's words just kind of roll off of him. So picking back up in verse 32 through 40, "And David said to Saul, 'Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine.' And Saul said to David, 'You were not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you were but a youth, and he's been a man of war from his youth.' But David said to Saul, 'Your servant is used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God.' And David said, 'The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine.' And Saul said to David, 'Go, and the Lord be with you.' Then Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. And David strapped his sword over his armor. And he tried in vain to go, for he had not tested them. Then David said to Saul, 'I cannot go in these, for I have not tested them.' So David put them off. Then he took his staff in his hand and chose 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand and he approached the Philistine." David is brought before King Saul, and what does he do? He comforts Saul and the people of Israel. He is so confident of victory, not because of his own prowess, but because he knows God is in control. And Saul is stunned. And he looks at David and tells him, kid, you're a kid. This guy, he's been fighting longer than you've been alive. He's going to eat you for lunch." Saul doesn't take into account God's power in this battle. He looks solely at David, and he doesn't see a solution to his problem. David's calm response, though, makes me want to hug him. He relates his exploits with the lion and the bear to Saul, not so that Saul will be impressed with him, but as he tells him in verse 37, because God delivered David from those threats, and David knows that God will deliver him from Goliath. David can see what no one else there could. I know he had to have been at least a little bit afraid, but you don't see any sign of it in his actions, because he is taking action. Everyone else sat around or hid. Saul gives in to David, probably for want of a better solution. It's been 40 days. Saul is now, in effect, dependent on David for both his sanity and for the safety of his nation. Remember, Saul, when he was chosen king, was supposed to be the king who would vanquish God's enemies. And here he sits, paralyzed by fear. Then comes David, who has already been anointed as the next king, and who is now responsible for the health of the current king. And David is about to be the fighter and defender of Israel that Saul was supposed to be. Saul hasn't even tried to solve this problem of Goliath himself. And here is someone, after 40 days of this nonsense, who volunteers to go to battle for them. So he is ready to let David try. But first he wants to outfit David in as much human protection as he can. And I just love the verse in verse 39 where it says, "David tried walking around." In other words, David wasn't exactly graceful. He wasn't walking around. He was trying to walk around. I kind of picture my sons as they put on my husband's shoes and then they can't pick their feet up to walk because their feet will pop right out of the boots that my husband puts on his feet. David takes off all of the armor, all of the human protection that Saul offers him, and says he doesn't need them. He knows he's protected by God, and that is what he really needs. Saul is reminded one more time that God is in charge here, not Saul. Saul, the deliverer of Israel from the hand of the Philistines as he was anointed by Samuel, is unwilling or unable to fight, So God brings forth David, who is willing and who will fight with God and without armor or kingly weapons. David knows he only needs God, and the rest of that stuff, all of the human trappings, will only get in his way. The last verse here has several interesting things that we often miss because we're reading it several thousand years after it was written. Some of what was understood to the original readers is a little lost to us. Now, first of all, the stones that were usually chosen for use in a sling were round and smooth, and they were somewhat larger than a baseball. David wasn't sitting at the stream collecting pebbles. Secondly, the tribe of Benjamin was known for its skill with a sling and a stone. Thirdly, David collects 5 stones. Now, some might say that David collecting 5 stones shows that he doubted God or doubted that he could kill Goliath quickly. I think we have to step back at this point and realize that God didn't promise David he'd be able to kill Goliath on the first throw. We know it only took 1 throw because we know how the story ends, but David didn't know the future. He didn't know 1 stone was enough. So we see David going into battle prepared. He had God on his side. He had the weapon of his choice. Remember, the Benjamites are skilled sling throwers, and he had his ammunition. Now, there's also speculation that David picked up the 5 stones for another reason, and I've heard this taught in other places. So I'm going to talk about this, but with the understanding that this theory is just that. It's a theory. It's not really backed up. We really can't prove it one way or the other. But the speculation is that he picked up 5 stones so that he could kill Goliath and 4 of Goliath's relatives. Yep, you read that right. Now, while 2 Samuel 21 verses 15 through 22 tells us the names of 2 of the 4 sons of the giant, their names were Ishbinabob and Saph, and it references the deaths of the other 2 of his sons. So we know that there were 4 male relatives hanging around somewhere with a potential bent for revenge. And that suggests that David didn't go into the battle with extra stones for Goliath. He went with extra stones to kill off the males of Goliath's family who would try to avenge their relative's death. So the theory is that David was so sure of God's deliverance that he didn't bring just-in-case stones. He brought exactly enough, and that's it. Now, while this theory is exciting and it's intriguing, we honestly can't make a solid case for it. It seems more likely that as the scrawny David defeats this giant, the giant's relatives are going to know that it wasn't because of how amazing David was. And they're going to know that God, the true God, is acting on David's behalf and is the one who brings the victory. And there aren't going to be any relatives hanging around to wait and see if they're going to get killed next. Regardless of whether David was prepared for battle with 1 or with 5 men, we can see that David had peace standing up to Goliath because he knew where his strength comes from. And here's the thing we forget so often. God is ready to be our strength in whatever we're facing today. Sometimes we do have giants to face. And when we try to fight them alone, we're always going to lose. As a mom, I always have just-in-case stuff along with me. We always have extra stuff. My husband gets a little irritated when packing the car for long trips because I need the assurance of the just-in-case stuff. Do I really need it? Yes, sometimes those things come in very handy. Other times, we could have found the same item at the nearest Walmart and been fine, and we would have had extra room in the car. If we're really, truly trusting God, how many of those just-in-case things do we really need? We put so much stock in the security of earthly things, and ultimately God is the one who's in control of it all. David understood that. And my question for us today is a simple one. Do we understand that we're not in charge of everything around us? Do we really understand that God is the one in charge? Does it show in our lives? My prayer today is for that kind of faith and trust in God. I take a tiny step forward towards that every day, but David, that boy, had that faith. What about you? Are you taking those steps forward in faith, or are you standing still? As the giant keeps on telling you, you're never going to win.
Well, thank you, Beth. And Beth's study guides, as well as the 10-minute podcasts of these presentations, are all available in our archives under the Bible Studies tab of our website, naomistable.com. Nancy and I will be back with more on this in just a moment.